Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. This week, I was talking to one of my coworkers, and he said something that really, kind of struck me. And he said, wouldn't it be amazing if every interaction with everyone was made through music or with song or something? And I thought, oh my gosh, yes. I mean, that sounds like a lot of work. And what are you going to do about people who don't have great voices and maybe don't want to sing? Maybe they can dance. But just his idea of seeing the world and interacting with the people in it through music and song just really was apropos of my conversation with my guest this week, Rob Bach, who, you know, later on in the interview, when he told me his father practiced and worked on piano for 8 hours a day, blew my mind. Rob loved music from the get-go, and his dad played accordion, piano, and organ in the house, and absolutely, as a result, instilled a deep love and appreciation for music of all kinds. And we have a super fun conversation around record stores, the disappearance and then the re-emergence of LPs. We talked the movie High Fidelity and so much more about the 80s. But point being, Rob wanted to work in music. And so his dream actually came true when at 17, working at a frozen yogurt shop, someone approached him and said, "Hey, come work at my music store when you turn 18. And the rest, as you'll hear, is history. Rob and I have a great conversation this episode, and he shares a powerful story about ancestry. Honestly, as I was listening to him tell me about his parents, his grandparents, his great-grandparents, and kind of the struggles, but then the rising and the overcoming that happened with each of those generations, I just sat back in awe. At any rate, that's enough from me. Let's get into this interview and my very fun and very musical conversation with Rob Bach.
Grandfather. So my dad's dad, he was tending his general store with a suspicious amount of cash on hand. It seems like he was loan sharking. Someone came in and he hesitated in turning over the money and he got shot in the head. So I dug up newspaper articles from the time and the presumption was, James Bach has been taken to the hospital where he will die, was one of the, almost exact quotes. I think there's a lot of there are many times in my life where I'm like, well, that kind of worked out. And it even plays in areas where I don't necessarily think I may have a different view than someone from outside might have. Just going back to an example I had before with my daughter being born, Hannah, when she was born, and we have this family history of disability going all the way from my dad's dad, who got shot in the head in the 1920s and survived, to my brother Michael being born with spina bifida, and me being in a car accident when I was 16 and having brain surgery, to Hannah coming along and just saying, "Hold my beer," and having all these unusual birth defects and things that she needed to get through in her early infant life. She was on a ventilator for a year and a half. We spent 3 months in the hospital with her. I bagged her and kind of made sure she could breathe and come back from being in a bad spot, to the 21-year-old she is today. She still needs help with everyday activities. That aside, she is the happiest person I know. As a dad, being able to walk in the room and have your daughter just radiate joy at you and want to do musical things with you and want to spend time with you and go on walks, it's amazing. And she's just found a place where she can be supported and happy. And she's 21 years old. Like, if you had told any of the doctors at 3 months that that's where we'd be, if they were going to vote, they would have said no. So as far as miracles and magic, I think they're just a lot of magic around Hannah, just an example. One, she ended up in a family that like, oh, we got this. We speak disability. We've done this. I watched my dad do it for decades with my older brother. So I was more prepared, I think, than most parents. Nobody asked for it, but here it is. And here she is. And it's just been great to see her progress. And my son, Gabe, is so helpful and also is one of Hannah's caregivers these days as a almost 25-year-old. So just found the right family and is just this joy to have in our lives and to help support while also being having her own opinions, trying to continue to grow and learn and push. That's all part of who she is as a human being. So I just think the fact that she's here and still growing is amazing.
Yeah. I just was listening to you and I was reflecting, you know, you kind of went through this list of events that I was like, what, you know, and you're like,
you gave her the brain surgery, went right to my daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first you start off with was it your great grandfather got shot?
My grandfather. So my dad's dad, he was tending his general store with a suspicious amount of cash on hand. It seems like he was loan sharking. And someone came in and he hesitated in turning over the money and he got shot in the head. So I dug up newspaper articles from the time and the presumption was, you know, James Bach has been taken to the hospital where he will die, was one of the, you know, almost exact quotes. But he survived and he lived a life with some interesting disabilities afterwards. He was mentally sharp, but his literal taste and figurative taste for everything was completely gone. At one point, he had a bunch of properties and he had them all painted yellow. So it'd be easy for my dad to go collect rent because he just had to go to the yellow houses. It was like, what? So I think he was impacted. But yeah, he survived at a time when that was, you know, wasn't painkillers were relatively new, coming off of World War One at that point. People with head injuries like that just typically didn't survive. He survived. And then, you know, my parents had my brother and kind of went through that experience. Then I was injured in an accident and had to come back from that and then had Hannah. So we've just had this theme of disability, which I've turned into disability advocacy. I've served on the Oregon Medicaid Advisory Board for 2 years and joined a nursing company on the board of directors for a couple of years, all to kind of take what I've learned and what I've been given and give it back, or at least try to.
Well, I appreciate you. I mean, first of all, what came to my mind was resilience, a lineage of resilience and just profound, profound strength. You know, resilience in, yes, I cannot believe your grandfather got shot in the head and survived at a time when that was not a normal thing. And by the way, painkillers were, you know, not as great as they are today. I do have to say my impression of painting the houses yellow, I thought to myself, okay, I'm sorry, but that's brilliant. Because, you know, I can be super absent-minded sometimes when given a task. And then I'm like, what did that person say? But if everything was painted yellow in my life, I would know what to do, where to go. I mean, I would just.
He also couldn't tell when something went bad in the fridge. So there were negatives to his sensitivities.
Okay. Got it. But I'm, you know, I had a great uncle, my mother's uncle, was in a car with his sister. And I don't know what adults, and I don't know how this happened, but they did suspect that the person who was supposed to be like putting down the train bars had fallen asleep or was drunk and didn't pay attention. And so their car got hit by a train and, you know, I don't know what kind of car. It was probably something akin to a Model T or maybe a little more, but not a robust vehicle. And Val died. And, you know, who knows with today's medical knowledge, what could have been achieved in that accident. But just looking at the resilience of, you know, my great aunt, my grandmother, you know, getting through that period, Val was only 15 or 16 years old. And that's quite something to get over when you're a child.
Yeah.
Your brother's no longer there with you. But I feel like so many family histories and lineages are marked by resilience, are marked by needing to show up, are marked by having to be strong and brave and show up for other people. And so I'm hearing your stories. And I do think it's interesting. Do you ever step back and just think, and I'm sure you do, but do you ever just step back and think, this is so curious that all of these different people in our family, this theme seems to pop up. And what is going on? Do you ever think that?
Yeah, I do. I've taken a couple stabs, given my creative writing background, to kind of put it to paper. And at some point, maybe that will happen, because I think there's something about that lineage and the resilience you're talking about and the ability to be able to say, OK, new information, new situation, let's adjust. When my oldest was born, I went to my dad for advice and said, what would you give me in the way of advice for me as a new dad? And my dad's quote was, be flexible. And that was born of that experience through the family, and it proved to be true for me too. Like whatever planning is, as I've heard in my lean manufacturing training, planning is essential and plans are worthless. So the fact that you're planning ahead, thinking about it, but when things actually start to happen, you got to throw it out and you got to adjust.
Yeah, truly. And then just one final question I'd love to ask you, because I think this is interesting. You know, when you had your car crash and you were severely injured, and you had to, you know, take the time and space in your life to recover, because you were a teenager, I think is what you said. And
yeah, I was 16.
Yeah. Teens are not known for liking to slow down and take it easy. It's like, that's almost painful in itself. Did looking at your brother and seeing his steadfastness, his ability to adjust and, you know, be in the world with all that he was, did that inspire you at that time?
I think my touchstone was different. Michael was making progress, but I think at that age, he hadn't had these huge successes that he had later in life. He ended up moving out, the first to move out on his own, found a lifetime partner and with support, lived in his own house for decades, doing exactly what he wanted to do, visiting the campus nearby for community, working a job there for part of it, telling everyone he was still going to college. He was just wheelchairing over to college to meet his people. So he found that later. But when I was young, he was pretty isolated by himself. So I think I found some inspiration in a couple of things. My parents wrote a journal about the 2 weeks of hell that I put them through and gave it to me shortly afterwards, because that is Jewish guilt times 10. So I had my memories, but they weren't mine because I couldn't remember that from my head trauma. And it also kicked off a period of exploration where a door closed. I had been in honors classes. My short-term memory was impacted by the brain surgery. I had to drop those classes. So what was I going to do with my time? And I ended up getting really involved in extracurricular activities, started a club, traveled for Mighty Nine Nations. We even got second place in the U.S. the year after my brain surgery as a new club. So it just kicked me into a different gear. So I think part of it was I had a new thing I had to adjust around that I really, in the short term, couldn't adjust around. So I had to find other ways to be interested and stay kind of motivated and stay busy. Like my dad, I don't sit still very well. So I think the whole situation kind of forced me to rethink my approach. And again, my parents and their friends, particularly through synagogue, were really important to that. I got a lot of don't ever do that to us again. And also a lot of open arms for what do you want to do now? So I think that was helpful in helping me find a different direction.
Well, and I'm also thinking about your brain and the brains of your ancestors and how creative and talented and just, I don't know, adaptable they appear to be. There's something about the creative brain, because I do think, you know, they do say some people who are creative, it's very difficult for them to adjust to change or, you know, from thing to thing if things change. But other people who are creative, just by virtue of studying the piano, studying the violin, learning how to read sheet music and sing. I mean, all the different just things that you studied and that your brain was focused on, your brain sounds like it was very adaptable. And you know, the brain injury that you had, perhaps as the result of studying all of these other instruments and other items, and was able to, I don't know, maybe repair itself quicker. I don't know. This is just supposition.
I think definitely, like, it, particularly that age when your brain is still making connections, it really keeps making those connections and growing through 25 or later. And then you start to kind of get set, or your brain gets set. So it was at a good time where I could make some changes and work around some, you know, short term and maybe even long term obstacles that came from the accident and the surgery. But I think, yeah, I just think there was, I wouldn't say I was the most flexible teenager, but after this, my parents said something's changed. Like, yes, partially because I'm not going to be quite as careless, and I can't be. And I found some new loves and things to grab my attention that I think I really appreciate from that period of being in that accident.
Yeah. And who knew that just 2 years from then you were going to be working at High Fidelity and be living life.
Yep. Embracing my dream with a particular focus that I think I was probably born with, but certainly was able to use a little bit more productively after the accident.
Hope that none of you were disappointed when I said that it was going to be a musical conversation and neither Rob nor I broke into song. Consider yourselves very lucky in that respect. I really enjoyed revisiting the 80s with Rob and talking records, High Fidelity, record stores, and that time in history. And it's really exciting that all of these bands are getting back together and releasing new music. Makes me happy. I need to thank Rob for showing up, telling the story of his family, of their resilience, their steadfastness. They're just overcoming insanely difficult times. I want to thank him for being so vulnerable and so open. I think by hearing other people's stories of overcoming hardship, it reminds all of us that we can do the same. So I really need to thank Rob for sharing all that he did. There will be a link in the episode show notes to what Rob is doing now, which is Spinny Media. It's led by Rob, and it helps musicians and labels sell more physical albums. And guess what? All musicians and labels keep 100% of their earnings. What a novel idea. Anyway, there will be a link in the episode show notes so you can check out Rob and the work that he is doing. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Rob, but also be like Rob's family. I mean, what Rob shared and the challenges that each generation has been through, but still they rise. I think it goes to show that no matter what we're confronted with, if we have the spirit, if we have the strength, and we have people around us to support us, we can survive anything. Now, Rob has music on his side, and he has physical LPs on his side, and a reminder that he's bringing beauty into the world, but still, I think his ancestry really played a part in him remembering just who he is. And remembering who we are, with all of our abilities to survive and surmount challenges, is really key to making it in this world. And in that case, Rob is the perfect example. So be like Rob and remember that you can survive anything. Because each And every one of us is not only built to survive, but also to thrive. With every step.